You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to jump right into this interview. Today we have comedian and musician extraordinaire Lana Turner. How are you, Lana?
Hey, I'm awesome. How are you?
Good, good, good. You know, I was checking out some of your comedy and your songs. They are hilarious. And you dance. You like to dance right on the edge. It's so funny, and it's like so almost controversial, some of the stuff that you have. So I wanted to ask you, like, what kind of drew you to comedy first? What made you want to be a comedian from the start?
I wanted to write songs. I'd been playing guitar my whole life, and I was going out around Houston playing open mics and doing little gigs. And I was like, I couldn't figure out how to make a living at it. And I was a huge fan of comedy. I didn't see very many women back then doing stand-up. Right. There's still not a whole lot of women. So I didn't have anyone to kind of model. So it didn't occur to me to do stand-up, but somebody had said, hey, you have really funny songs. You should go to the open mic. And I was like, all right, why not? I used to go to that club all the time and just check out stand-up. And so I wandered in and I got paid within a few weeks of starting. And I was like, I didn't even know what it was for. I was like, what is this? Like $20 is burning a hole in my hand. And then once that happened, I realized, well, I can write songs and at least get by, you know? And I love it
too. I always find artists, like, as soon as you figure out, wait, I can get paid for this, there's like that light bulb goes off. So I love that you had that moment at an open mic and just kind of figured it out. Who were the comedians you were kind of like checking out or kind of gravitating towards? Because nobody's really doing a lot of that, what you're doing now, back then, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously like musical comics like Adam Sandler there's a few, but there are not too many women, still not too many women. So, right. But I love stand-up comedy. And initially when I started, I was terrified of just doing monology, you know, just standing up and talking. But right. So I had this buffer between myself and the audience because I could always grab my guitar and play a song. And that was kind of my safety net. But even just watching stand-up, I mean, I was a huge fan of comedians. And I was very fortunate because early on I got to work with some amazing comics right out the gate. Cause I mean, I was a small comic in a big city, and big comics would come through Houston. So one of the first people I opened up for was Bill Burr. And I was just like, oh my gosh. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and he wasn't known back then, but he was phenomenal. And then shortly after him was Joe Rogan. And I was like, oh my God, like how could, you know, it just blew my mind. So immediately starting to work and meet people just really was inspiring to me to keep going.
I always find like some of the sharpest minds are comedians and musicians. You happen to be both. So did you, when you were like in high school or grade school, were you like the class clown or kind of like, you know, because a lot of comedians, they always say, well, it started in my science class, or I just figured I started with, you know, making fun of the teacher or whatever the lesson was and started getting laughs. And that's when they got hooked. What was that moment for you like?
Well, I was not a class clown or outgoing in high school. Around my friends, I was like, if I feel, and even to this day, you know, if I feel comfortable talking to somebody, then I'll open up. But I'm not, you know, we met around people. I'm not like the loudest person in the group by any stretch. But I was even very shy to play my guitar in front of anyone. I started playing guitar when I was very young, and I was almost embarrassed that I played guitar.
Why is that? So,
I don't know. Again, being a girl, and there weren't very many girls even that were playing guitar. I just didn't have that. And I was shy. I was very, very shy. I worked. Okay, so this take you back before music. I was always playing guitar and always writing songs. But after high school, I started working as a photographer. I became a professional photojournalist at a very young age. And that was really more in line with my personality back then, because I could hide behind a camera and still be an artist, wear a hat and try and blend in and wear jeans and not be seen, because I don't want to be seen. I want to take pictures and I don't want anybody to look at me. But it made me kind of fearless. And one of my fears was getting in front of people and sharing my songs. And it's an irrational fear. And I thought I should conquer that. And as soon as I started getting on stage, it really opened me up. I think that that's a part of my personality, that now I can be myself, but a different version of myself on stage. And it's really fun.
Yeah, I love that. So many artists go through this kind of like awkward phase of kind of figuring out, discovering themselves. And, you know, one of the things about being an artist and doing art is you go to these realms and different genres that terrify you. So I love that you had these moments, because I mean, it's the truth. It's like you're kind of building up your inner strength to be able to do these things and feel creative and feel like you can contribute. And that's a terrifying thing for any artist to take on. I love that you took that on. Where did you grow up? And like, did you have comedians or artists in your family? Who were some of the main influences when you were growing up?
Well, I grew up in, I was born in Canada and raised in Texas. So uh-huh. I always like to say howdy, A. And then I like to say that I've been in LA so long. I'm so LA, I hate myself. Like, I love being in Los Angeles. I think this is like, I feel like this is where I'm from now. But early on, my father, sadly for him, was a big influence. And I say sadly for him, because I don't think that any parent goes, you know what, my daughter grows up, I really want her doing gigs on the road in bars late at night, you know, right, telling dick jokes. But my dad played guitar growing up, and he wasn't a very good guitar player, but he played funny. He would intentionally mess up a song or intentionally sing it off key. And as a little girl, I just thought he was hilarious. And my dad's very dry and also very introverted, but that was very funny. So I think he inspired me. And my mom's a frustrated artist. She's a really excellent painter and super talented, and never really got a chance to share that in a big way. And but she's definitely inspired me too.
And that probably empowered you. I mean, seeing your mom and your dad, that, I mean, it kind of makes sense that you felt like, okay, I need to kind of take this on as a way to kind of combine both kind of influences.
I suppose. I mean, they were not overly supportive of me going down this road, but I think it was a good path for me. And I think they understood that, because I also was diagnosed very young as learning disabled and attention deficit, which now is like pretty common. But as a little girl, I really felt like I was stupid my whole childhood growing up. And you learn as you get older. Well, it's not that you're stupid. You just learn differently. And but, you know, that was crushing for my self-esteem. And so I was very, very quiet and would not talk out loud and would not read out loud in class. But I actually learned this in therapy, that being in front of a room of people and receiving their approval through laughter is an incredible stroke to a shattered ego. Mm-hmm. And so finding comedy sort of massages that damaged child inside, that you're like, oh, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough. Wait, here's a room full of people cheering and laughing for me. And then on the nights that they don't cheer and laugh, you go, well, all right, I need to go back and re-examine why that didn't happen. But that's part of learning. And or maybe that reaffirms that, oh no, I'm not good enough. But then you go back in and try again. And I tend to do well most of the time. And I love comedy. So yeah, but I think it's a variety of things that led me down this road.
That's amazing. You know, this is a selfish question for me, because I love comedy so much. And as a musician, you know, like I think the way you develop music and the way you develop comedy, they're kind of different, because in one sense, you can rehearse a song over and over until you get it right. But in comedy, I think you and I talked about this, your rehearsal is actually your performance. Like, you have to whittle down and find the right timing of a joke while you're up there performing and figure that out. Tell me what that creative process was like and how you had to adjust from those two creative processes.
Huh, interesting. Well, you know, as far as the songs go, it is a bit of a cheat, because I can write a song and know that it's pretty funny. But I don't know what's going to work until I get in front of a room. And right. I consider myself a really excellent lyricist. I'm not like you are ridiculous. Your stuff is amazing. I'm a decent guitar player. For as long as I've played, I should be a lot better.
No, you can play, you can sing, and you can write, and you're also funny. It's like you're kind of a quadruple threat, you know, when it comes to that. So trust me, it's not easy doing that stuff. It's not.
My songs are simple, but yeah, no, I mean, some of them are more complex. But when I get in front of an audience, it's interesting when I go in studio and I have to play to a click track. That's really hard for me because I'm so accustomed to kind of sitting and waiting for the laugh or playing with the audience between different things with my guitar.
Right.
But when it comes to stand up, at some point, I must have been about 5 years into comedy, I realized I need to put my guitar down and learn how to just talk into a microphone and make jokes. Otherwise, I'm going to be really stifled in this one area of stand up that really isn't allowing me to do what I need to be able to do to continue, like keep going forward. So it was terrifying. I put my guitar down and I just kept going about stage and working out how to tell a joke. And for me, I'll come up with something. And then I think this, like what you just said, I have to go in front of a room and see what they think.
Right.
And you can't always, and you don't want to bail on it. You want to keep trying it and massaging it. There was a dark period in my life where I started talking about really more emotionally trying things on stage, where I've been going even more as I've gotten older as a comic, like talking about things that are challenging. And that was an interesting time because here's the thing. You have to embrace the bomb. And that's a hard thing to do. Cause like I was talking about, you have a fragile ego, you don't want to bomb, but if you don't bomb, you're not going to get better. And I learned that a lot in trying to do material that was darker and more difficult to get to find the jokes, but you're not going to find them if you don't plow through the bomb.
Did you find like that you were tapping into like dark circumstances in culture, personal, or was it where did you find those places that you were kind of touching upon on subject?
Personal. Personal stuff. I'll touch on popular stuff or stuff in the news sometimes, but I talk a lot about more personal stuff. I like to talk about my kids, but the dark stuff was, you know, going through divorce and then going through death and loss and things like that, that aren't supposed to be funny, but when you can make that stuff funny, you'd be amazed how many people in the audience will come up to you afterwards and give you a hug because they're going through it too. And so it's really nice for people to be able to laugh through the tough stuff together, which is a lot different than where I started out, you know, all those years ago, just writing a, you know, masturbation song or something. I mean, we all do that too, and that helps us get through stuff as well, but it's, you know, not the same.
Well, you know what I've always find so unbelievable about comedians, they always are choosing subject matter, like they almost thrive in the uncomfortable. And I think that's like the true essence of an artist. It's like when you create something, you're trying to do something that's difficult or a challenge. And comedians, they're just in that world. So it's like whenever I hear a comedian trying stuff out or experimenting, it kind of blows my mind because they are going for it in a realm and in a live atmosphere where it's like, you don't know, it could work in one audience. And then the next night you could change some little detail and it's the same joke, but it doesn't work. So like what I find is like, you're trying to capture lightning in a bottle, but you're doing it in like different ways to kind of like change up the variables. How do you find your process changes either with an audience or with the subject matter, or are you looking for things to kind of be cutting edge? Like, how do you kind of formulate material?
I mean, there are some audiences that I won't go up in front of and do my suicide bit. Like that's just not going to fly in a bar show. So, I mean, I could selfishly go up and be like, this is what I'm working on tonight. And if I turn off half the room, I don't care because I want to get through this material and I need to see where it's going to go. But if I want to have a good show and I want those people to universally enjoy their night and go home and say, oh, I really liked that, then maybe I won't touch on it on that particular night. And I think you'll see a lot of different ideas from different comics. And it depends. Like sometimes you just go out and you're like, you know, I deserve the opportunity to do this bit. And whether it works or not, I'm not going to worry about the audience as much tonight. And hopefully they like it. And it's interesting, like, you're the guy in the audience who's going to be there like, yeah, I get it. I'm so glad you talked about that tonight. And somebody else might be like, nah, I'm not having it.
Well, are you serving the purpose of the joke? Or it's, I mean, I love that you said that, because it's like you're reading the room, which is like a part of entertainment. You're doing that, like you're reading the room and you want to kind of elevate or, lighten the mood in the room. But at the same time, you're an artist, and it's like part of it is cutting your teeth, finding the right space for certain jokes to kind of flourish. Do you kind of use certain parts of your set? Like, would you use like the first 5 minutes to try out new material, the middle five, you know, like tell me when is the place to try new material?
It's good that you said that, because that's exactly where my mind was going. Because like, if you're working on something new or something dark and you only have 5 or 10 minutes, you're doing a show in LA, but it's a showcase with a bunch of other comics, you might not want to dig too deep into something that you can't dig out of if you're not feeling like you can in that particular audience. But typically what you want to do is try and wedge something new between two things that you know are going to work. So that way you're not just stuck going, oh, that didn't go well. All right. Good night, guys. Thanks. You know, so that's typically a rule of thumb. Like, okay, I'm going to try this challenging thing out, but before I do, I'm going to make sure that the audience trusts me and that they know that I'm going to take them down a good road. And then that's just it. When you have, you know, when you're touring and you have an hour on stage every night, you can build material very quickly. When you're doing 10-minute spots, it's a different game.
And I always find it like fascinating when comedians, like, they'll have like almost like a table of contents. They'll have like little notes they'll look at sometimes. Do you kind of do that? Do you kind of have like a set where you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this bit, and then it triggers you to get into it? Or do you kind of like read the audience and kind of know, okay, this is going to work now, and this is where I'm going to go here?
You would be mortified if you picked up a sheet of paper with my set list on it, because it would be like trigger words of like the most heinous, like... like, you know, like dick jokes, sex jokes, you know, and then like death and murder. And like, at one time recently, I wrote my set list on my hand, and I woke up the next morning and I went to the gym, and I was like, if anybody read my hand, they would think I was the worst person ever. Like, what is wrong with this woman? I mean, you just sometimes I'll wing it, but I always kind of have, I've been doing it for a very long time. So if I'm on stage and I want to go in a different direction, it's possible. What I can't do is always just pick up my guitar and go into a song, because a song can take up, 5 minutes. So right. If I'm going to do a song, I need to be ready to do it. Like, I need to make sure I'm being considerate. If there's other people on the show, I'm not going to run the light and, you know, things like that. But, or if I have a new song, I don't know how that's going to go. That's a big commitment too. If I'm going to pull up my guitar and I'm going to play a new song and it's not going well, I'm going to have to get through that. But usually audiences are pretty receptive and understand they're part of this new experience. I'll even tell them, all right, we're in this together. Let's see what happens.
Well, I was watching a lot of your material, and it's like, you just seemed like a seasoned vet. Let's play something real quick. What do you want to play first? We have Small D's and Frank and Helen and Recycled Music Video. Which one of those do you want to play first?
Well, let's do the Helen Keller, since you're saying I'm offensive. Well, they're all a little offensive.
Here's Anne Frank and Helen Keller by Lana Turner. Sam, we got it? Hold on. We're waiting for Sam. Oh, Anne Frank and Helen. We're doing that one first.
The duet.
So this right here is a duet between Anne Frank and Helen Keller.
Oh,
You guys are so good. What do you say we divide the room down the middle and do it as a round? What do you say, right here? Yeah. All of you guys on this side, you be Helen Keller. This side, Anne Frank. All right, let's do it. Ready? I know I'm so going to hell, but now you're coming with me, which makes it so much more fun.
Controversial
and crazy. So I just realized if somebody's listening to it instead of seeing it, there's like the sketches mixed in with the live performance. So like some of that stuff might be confusing auditorily, but like,
well, let's talk about it. Yeah. So how did you kind of come up with this concept, which is so crazy and so controversial at the same time?
As a few years ago, I was going to Kansas City, and there's an amazing, one of my favorite radio guys there, morning DJs, Johnny Dare. I was waking up in the morning to go do his show, and I'd had that idea the night before for a duet between Anne Frank and Helen Keller. And I was like, oh, this is terrible. And I went into the station, and Johnny's like, hey, what's going on? And we're already on the air. And during the break, I said to him, I go, oh my gosh, Johnny, I came up with something and it's too horrible. I'll never be able to do it on stage. And he goes, what is it? Well, it's a duet between Anne Frank and Helen Keller. And he comes back from break and he's like, Lana has a brand new song and she's going to premiere it right now on the radio. And I was horrified and I went ahead and did it. And that night there was a bunch of people that showed up and they were all like waiting for me to play that song, that duet between Anne Frank. Yeah.
So you had instant reactions to it right away.
Yeah. And I mean, it always did really, really well. Because it's just so ridiculous. And then, I mean, I tried doing other versions of it, you know, like Malala and Helen Keller, you know, or Malala and Anne Frank, you know, like different.
Right. But combining just, two icons.
Just seeing where it would go, I'm trying to remember what the Malala was. It was pretty bad. It was like a woman deserves a right to an education. And then Frank's like, shut up. They're going to kill you. Like, they're going to shoot you. Like, no. Like, terrible. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I'm sure. Have you ever gotten any negative kind of criticisms just based on the material? Or is it, still pretty new to people?
I mean, that bit, I haven't been doing that for a while. Like once I recorded it for my 1 hour special, I rarely ever do it, but I mean, I'm sure I'm whenever you're pushing boundaries and doing something, you're going to offend somebody. And you know what? Not everyone's going to like you. And that's hard because I want everyone to like me. I want to make everyone laugh, but I also can't be.
You can't honest. Please everybody. It's
impossible. No, you really can't. It's, you know, it doesn't matter if you're like Jeff Dunham with puppets or you're, you know, like Doug Stanhope. I don't know who he is, but like as edgy as possible, somebody's going to get annoyed and not like you. So you may as well just try to do whatever you do and hope that the people who like you find you. But yeah, so.
Well, I love that you just like, you know, you're thinking about controversial topics and trying to make somewhat of a light situation of it, even though it's like, you know, the world we know is like a dreadful place in a lot of ways. And it's like, sometimes we have to just take a step back and kind of look at things with a different perspective sometimes, you know what I mean? But how do you kind of formulate material where you know something's going to work or it's not going to work just as you're cultivating it before you even walk on stage?
I mean, I might not have ever done that bit had Johnny not been like, you're doing it now. Wow. For that one. But I mean, I'll have an idea for something and then, you know, you'll try it and hope it works and then just keep hammering on it. And then sometimes you'll try something and it doesn't work and you'll abandon it and then go back to it because it works later, or you mature as a comic and you're able to talk about something that you weren't able to talk about before. I never dreamt that I'd be able to talk about death and stuff like that, but it's true to who I, my experience. And so therefore I can go there, and it's sad, but it's also cathartic. Which you don't have anything of that recorded, but, you know, it's part of it.
Do you feel like there's anything that's off limits as an artist or a comedian? Or do you think that certain things, just as an artist, you're supposed to kind of like put it all out there and be vulnerable?
I think there are things now that are off limits. But, you know, okay, so here's the thing. There are things that were off limits 10 years ago that you could not talk about on stage. And there are things now that you absolutely cannot touch on, right? Like, people are just too sensitive. For example, I wrote a song, and it's my favorite new song to play. And I wrote it about a year ago. It's about my daughter getting her period for the first time. And it's so awesome. But I remember when I started comedy, all these men would be like, don't ever talk about your period on stage. You're just going to turn off the audience. And now it's so embraced to just be a woman. And I mean, it's awesome. But like I said, I could not have done that all those years ago. And then now I just purchased back my 1 hour special because, you know, when you're an artist, you sell your material and it's not always well represented. And I'm in a position now where I was very blessed and I was able to get it back. And I did a re-edit on it and I dropped 2 R words in my special because 10 years ago when I recorded it, it wasn't the R word. You could say it. And I think I left one in because it just didn't matter. But like, you can't say stuff like that anymore. People get really offended. I did a project called Limeade a few years ago where I parodied Beyonce's Lemonade. And I love Beyonce and I love Lemonade. It's awesome. But right. It's a comedy visual album. And so in that parody, I did a picture of myself, and on her album cover, she's leaning forward and she's beautiful with braids. And so I did the cover of my project leaning forward with braids close up. But then when we panned out, I was just sitting on the toilet. And clearly,
that's awesome.
Right? Like, that's the joke. It's clear that it's a joke. And I put the photos up and people got it. And then there was some fraction, and I guess they're like snowflakes. They were all white women that were like, but this is racial appropriation. It was like 4 or 5 just millennial age white girls telling me that. And I was like, wait, I'm not racially I'm parodying somebody, which is a compliment, by the way. Right. I love Beyonce. How am I supposed to parody her if I don't emulate her? Look, I didn't change the color of my complexion. I just did my hair like her hair. And I was like, but those people were just looking to be offended. And I actually said that I wrote her back and I was like, you're really racist. Like, if you can't see that this is a joke and that you're so focused on it, because I didn't even. So, yeah, you can offend somebody by just the stupidest thing.
Well, I feel like society kind of is never ahead of the curve, you know, and I think artists kind of are pulling society a little bit along to kind of like be a little bit more open-minded, and people are easily offended because of, you know, whether it's religious reasons or racial reasons or whatever it is. But I think the more that we can all kind of like look at ourselves and laugh, it kind of shows us that we're all connected on some level, like nobody's above anybody else. That's what I also love about comedy. It's like, you're going to take a swing at everybody because everybody deserves to be laughed at. And I think that's a good thing. And sometimes we take ourselves a little too seriously. So sometimes people are just looking for something, like you said. Do you feel as a comedian that there's a part of your role as a comedian to pull society across, you know, the edge so that they can kind of loosen up and kind of, you know, become part of the times, so to speak?
I mean, I don't know that it's my role. I know that it's fun to dance close to the edge, but I mean, you have people who are so accomplished and amazingly talented who put up a tweet like 10 years ago, and then somebody digs it up and they get in trouble for it. And you're just right. Like, what the heck is going on? But right. I mean, I love that feeling of coming up with something that's super edgy, and my favorite comics do that. So I think historically you're right. Like, entertainers and performers do push the envelope and do push things forward, and are the first ones to get banned when things are going down the wrong path. So,
yeah, you look at, you know, literature is a big part of that. Comedy, music, films. I mean, they're all kind of trying to show a perspective to kind of help society kind of get with it on some level, you know, and some of that backlash is going to come from people that are just behind the times, you know?
Well, and that type of expression isn't allowed in certain parts of the world where they're not wanting you to have an open society. So yeah, we're very blessed. I've been lucky enough to perform for the troops quite a few times over the years and do some USO tours, and I always say that they preserve my right to tell dick jokes.
Right. That's awesome. Well, look, that's a perfect segue. Why don't we play Small D's? Here's the little clip about Small D's.
Okay.
My mama was wise. Her proverbs were good. If you listen to mama, life turned out like it should. She said grass is greener on the other side. And be careful what you put in your mouth and behind. My mama was wise. My mama knew. Small dicks are perfect for oral and anal too. You gotta be a nut, and no one wants monster cock going in their butt. Too much of a good thing ain't good, mama knew. Small dicks are perfect for oral and anal too. No one's saying. Ain't a big win. You can make up for size with a cucumber spatula or rolling pin. Cause many things go in a vagina according to Granny, but only certain things can fit proper inside your fanny. Great Granny told Granny, so my mama knew. Ready? Small some of you. That's nice. Black guys don't like this song. I know, you get mad. Like, what do you mean it's not good for anal? Asian guys love this song. Thank you. generation not to pass on little dick, just to get a guy with a big one who's a real prick, because size, it don't matter when you're old and gray, when that dick, it don't work no more anyway. Even a little pecker can hit a clit. My mama knew small dicks are perfect for whirling anal too.
There you go, let's try it again, ready?
Yeah, small dicks are perfect for whirling anal too. One more time for mama, ready? Yeah?
So good. So good. Tell me what the process was like when you were coming up with this song, because everything hits. Every line hits, and it's so great that you have kind of the subtitles with it so everybody can follow. But how you were piecing that together and what kind of inspired that?
You know, like the whole conversation about pushing our like intellectual world forward. That was like definitely the mission in that song, right? Like,
right, of course.
See how we can get together as a world and make it a better place. It's so, I don't really read, like, I honestly, I just came up with the hook, the small dicks are perfect for oral and anal, which was funny. And I was like, that's hilarious. And and if I make it from my mom's perspective, which is really why my parents love my comedy. They're so proud. They're really, I mean, the process was I wrote the lyrics and then just really simple chords.
That's what makes it. It is a marriage of simplicity and then fire on the side of the lyrics, because like you are dropping firebombs with every line. And it's like, I like the way you pace the joke too, because you're ahead of the curve with the audience. And you're waiting for them to kind of like catch all the lines, and you know when to bring them in and kind of like, you know, ridicule them. Like even the fact, one of my favorite parts of this video is the way you're trying to cue everybody to sing along with the lyrics. That's what makes it so great. You're like, come on, sing along. And people are like almost uncomfortable, even though it's like ringing in their ears. It's such a, like a hooky hook. But they're like, wait, are we doing a sing-along right now about this material? And you're like, come on, you're making it inviting. So was that something that you kind of curated over time, or was that part of the shtick? You knew you were going to have to do that when you were creating the joke.
In the last few years, I've really gotten into trying to do more and more sing-alongs, and it's just fun for me. And it was Mother's Day on Sunday. I played that song. I did Mother's Day brunch at the Ice House, two shows. And it was so much fun to play that song and have adult children sitting next to their parents and having to get them to sing.
That's a real bonding moment.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was hilarious. But yeah, that one was just purely like, oh, that's a funny hook, and I'm gonna try and write. And again, I feel like I'm a really strong lyricist and a decent guitar player, so right. I can get by playing simple chords, but really power, like strong lyrics.
Well, it's so funny to me too that you said that you were shy and you're introverted, and then you see yourself doing this. That shy introverted person looking at you in that video would be so proud, because it's like, it takes some serious confidence just to go out there and just sing a song. Doesn't matter what it's about, or do comedy, and the way you marry both and then add that extra layer of, let's make it about something taboo that I'm going to poke fun at. I mean, it's next level. That's what made it so great. So I hope you continue to do more material like that, because, you know, one of the things that I go to comedy shows all the time, because comedy is like, it's, to me, like a lot like music, you know, it has rhythm and it has soul and it has entertainment beyond measure. And I find that they're a lot like jazz musicians. I think comedians are a lot like jazz musicians because they're constantly improvising and kind of like reading a room and seeing how things are. But the best comedians are the ones that are cutting edge. Like, those are my favorite comedians that are kind of like putting it all on the line, talking about the taboo, talking about the things that we're not talking about as society, whether it's political or whether it's sexual or whether it's spiritual or racial. It's kind of like we all have to look at these things in a way. And, you know, you're doing it with something light like comedy, but it's such heavy material. I mean, really, that when you think about it, it's like you could never do something like this in countries like Saudi Arabia or Iran. You know what I mean? It's like exercising that freedom of speech thing, which is a great thing, but you're doing it in an artistic way. So I hope you always continue to do that. Let's play something else. We're going to play the recycled music video next. Here is a very funny music video by Lana Turner.
I began to think I was looking fine when a young boy smiled at me. I flirted back, I gave him a wink, I took him seriously. I thought it was on, sparks in the air, he started to walk my way. Then he waved at my kids, called me ma'am, turned and walked away. It's better when it's used.
Recycle!
If the muffler is good and the engine purrs too, who cares about dents? You never should buy new. Kids might mess it up, but all it needs is love, like your favorite old t-shirt or a beat-up baseball glove. Good things get better with age, like cars, wine, boats, and booze. So tap mama's ass. It's better when it's used. A cougar, do not throw away, like meat liver lasagna, it's always better the next day. Pussy doesn't spoil, so just turn out the light, like sexual primate steak with a touch of cellulite. If you find yourself a milf, you're gonna have some fun, and the best part, there's milk and cookies when you're done.
I love that music video. Tell me, I want to ask you a genre-specific question. First of all, I love country music, bluegrass music, all of that. How did you choose that as the platform for this song? Did you write it in that style, or were you kind of like, I need something bouncy that's going to work? Because it's kind of like a quirky, perky, cool, funny video touching on a very kind of funny subject too, you know? So tell me a little bit about that.
I mean, I'm pretty heavily influenced by growing up, one, in Canada, where there's sort of this like Canadian country kind of thing that happens there. And then being a transplant to Texas, where I was very much influenced by, you know, I had a lot of bluegrass, and the singer-songwriter community there has that sort of GCD kind of thing going on. And I feel like that's sort of a comfort zone for me. So it's simple song, a simple music with what I would say, I'm a stronger lyricist. So, that song was written in a collection of songs that I wrote when my husband and I were splitting up because it was part of that Limeade experience. And so it was one of the, you know, celebrating that we're going to be okay and we're moving on. And so it had to be a fun, happy, you know, hey, we're recycling vagina. What could be wrong with that? It's a fun song.
Well, and so. That's something that, you know, like there are a lot of divorces and people that once they get, you know, to that point in their life, it's like a rejuvenation. It's like being reborn again on some level. So that's what is cool about it. You're like you're poking fun at it, but you're also making light and also giving people confidence about that transition, you know?
Totally. Well, and for women, as we age, it's definitely a thing. But I have to also give a shout out to Norman Arnold, who produced that album with me and for me. I mean, and he's brilliant, and we had a lot of fun. And it was a really cathartic experience to go through, like, recording comedy songs and making, like, these really challenging moments, funny for me and funny for other people who also are going through that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So,
well, it's like art becomes therapy at that point. You know what I mean? So there's something that is therapeutic and also healing and also empowering. I think a lot of what you're saying is kind of fun and empowering for kind of people to know that if you go through something like that, hey, life's not over. You can still live and have fun and enjoy yourself. And that's what it's about, you know?
Even with your, like, I'm terrified of having an aging vagina. Like, let's be honest here. Like, that's a terrifying
problem. Me too.
It's so scary. Right. Let's, like, find a way to make it fun.
No, but I mean, you do. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, there's so many stigmas in society and there's so many things that, that's what I like about your comedy. You're constantly dancing on the line, and I hope you continue to do that. Where can people find you if they want to find you online? What's your YouTube channel? What's your website? Where can people find
you? It's all just my name. I always say that Lana is spelled with an H, L-A-H-N-A. Otherwise, backwards, it would spell anal. So it's just Lana, L-A-H-N-A, Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R. And you can just find me online on my handles, Facebook, YouTube. Everything is.
What are your handles, just so people know if they're listening?
At Lana Turner. I think there's an extra R on my Instagram one for some reason. I don't know why I set that up so long ago. So it's Lana Turner-er. But otherwise, everything is just L-A-H-N-A-T-U-R-N-E-R. And you can just go to my website, and that will also bring you to all the other platforms. So
awesome.
Yeah. Well, Lana, and I always have shows.
Thank you so much for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. We look forward to seeing you at any comedy club around LA and beyond. And you know what? One of the reasons I started this platform is I want to showcase artists and showcase their career. So I'm going to have you back in about 9 or 10 months and have more comedy and more bits that you have, more songs, because that's what this is all about. It's about showcasing a career and not just like a little blip. So we're going to welcome you with open arms, and we're so happy and honored to have you on Wake Up Hollywood. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. You're wonderful.
All right. You were awesome. And say hello to Sean for me too. And April too.
Yes, I will. Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you, Sam. Thank you guys.
On behalf of Sam, myself, and Lana, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence. Right here on LA Talk Radio.